The Supreme Court rules an anti-abortion group can challenge an Ohio law that bars people from making false statements about political candidates during a campaign. Federal judge restores 3 days of early voting in Ohio, and statewide campaigns are heating up for the summer ahead of the November election. Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler joins us for a look at the latest political news and legislative happenings in Ohio. You can join the conversation. Our number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And Karen, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
And thanks for altering your schedule. Karen was originally supposed to be on in the first part of the program, but with the president, we kindly asked her if she would bump to the second half, which she was willing to do, so we thank you for that.
Well, I'm used to that. I mean, covering politicians all the time, their schedules yeah. are very, very random.
That's true.
I'll start with a couple of questions here and then let you and Howard talk a little politics. The legislature is now on break, I believe, until the fall.
Yeah.
A couple of things they did before they left town. It has a fancy name, but I'm just going to call it, basically, they updated the budget. So tell us about what was in that budget update.
Well, there are several bills in that budget update, and you might recall back in, I believe it was March, when the governor actually introduced what has been called the Mid-Biennium Review, or the MBR, and it's basically an update a year into the two-year budget cycle. And governors have often had to do these updates, they just haven't necessarily done them as publicly or through legislation like Governor Kasich has done it, and he made a comment at one of the signing events that he's done in the last couple of days that he's going to continue to do these sorts of budget updates if he is indeed reelected. But this week he signed several of these 14 bills that relate to his budget update. The main one is one that includes an acceleration of the personal income tax cut from the budget and also a bigger tax cut for small businesses. It also includes some things for lower income Ohioans. It doubles the earned income tax credit and also makes some increases in the personal tax exemption for people who make under $80,000 a year. And he signed this at the headquarters of a food bank here in Columbus, which he really wanted to draw attention to the items in that that were for the lower income Ohioans, since he's gotten a lot of attention and a lot of heat from some Democrats for the tax cuts that have gone to small businesses and to the higher income taxpayers.
And one other thing that seemed to generate a lot of coverage from you folks and a lot of newspaper ink was the dealing around the energy standards. Tell us about that process.
Yeah, this is a bill that had come from Senator Bill Sites of Cincinnati originally, and it would have scrapped those energy standards entirely. Senator Sites' bill would have changed the law that was passed in 2008 that required electric utilities to get 25% of their electricity from alternative sources by 2025, half of those being renewable sources. Sites wanted to scrap the standards entirely, saying they were costing utilities too much money and that was going to cost ratepayers too much money. Opponents had said these standards are very important. There's a whole green business that's grown up in Ohio around these. Eventually they do save ratepayers money, and so they wanted to keep the standards. Governor Kasich got involved to try to broker a deal here, and the deal that he feels that was appropriate that he brokered was a two-year freeze, and this is the law that he signed last week. This two-year freeze would allow for a panel of lawmakers to look at the costs and the benefits of these mandates, and then if lawmakers do nothing on them in 2 years, 2017, these standards will start back up again, and utilities will be expected to meet those alternative energy standards by a certain period of time if lawmakers do act, and a lot of people do expect them to act further and change those mandates again, then that would be what would happen. So the governor felt that this was a moderate approach. It was a compromise where nobody got exactly what they want, but a lot of advocates are very, very disappointed. Ohio is the first state in the country, actually, to change its alternative energy standards and to pull back on them.
Karen, we finally, I think, have resolved this issue about the early voting on the final 3 days before the election with this federal court ruling.
You'd think you have, but
yeah,
I
you
don't
think,
know.
Yeah, you never know.
That's right.
I mean, it was resolved in 2012 by a district judge, and now a U.S. district judge has said he makes that ruling permanent.
Yes.
And John Houston said, okay, fine. You know, we'll have voting in the 88 counties on the 3 days prior to the election. He says, all I want is uniformity across the state of Ohio. I mean, do you think this issue's over now? Or
I don't think so. I mean, certainly the issue of whether there will be the 3 days of voting has been decided by this judge. I suppose there is an argument that the legislature could make, that they could come back and legally change that, make a change in the law,
right,
pass a new law. So there's always that room to move there. But I think the issue of uniformity is what we're going to see lawmakers really discussing here, because you have advocates who say that uniformity isn't fair, that the needs of big counties like Hamilton County are different than the needs of smaller counties like, you know, Fayette County,
right,
Butler County, whatever. And so to have uniform hours really doesn't do the people in some counties as good as it does the people in other counties. And the other side of that argument is uniformity, at least everybody knows when the hours are. And if you've got congressional districts that cross several different counties, then everybody in the district gets the same opportunity to vote. So I think that issue of uniformity is what lawmakers are really going to start looking at now, now that we've temporarily settled this 3 days of voting thing, and I think that will hold through 2016. I think that issue of uniformity is really going to be an issue that lawmakers are going to start looking at.
And I believe it was the Columbus Dispatch, if not, you can correct me, but I believe there was a newspaper analysis saying that those early voting days really had no effect in the last three presidential elections?
Right. And you know, it's interesting to see the arguments about early voting in general, because there are stats that show that early voting hasn't brought in a significant amount of new voters. That the new voters, the big jump in Ohio in terms of people voting, was in 2004. And that was before early voting. Early voting started in 2005. And since then, we really haven't seen an influx in terms of the numbers of new voters. And so, you know, the question then becomes, what is early voting doing? If it's not bringing in new voters, it's more convenient, perhaps, for existing voters. And so there are a lot of questions about who does the early voting, when they do it. Because you can early vote, you can stand in line, you can drop off your ballot, you can, there are lots of ways to do early voting. You can mail it in. The question is, though, about those 3 days of early voting on the weekend. A lot of activists had wanted, especially that Sunday, because you have a lot of churches that organize and try to bring their souls to the polls on that Sunday, and that really was a day that they wanted to get back.
Yes.
Would this 3 days of early voting even be an issue in Ohio if Ohio were not a swing state or a battleground state in the presidential election? Because Howard and I were talking offline yesterday. The states surrounding Ohio, I believe, Kentucky, Indiana, Pennsylvania, even don't have early voting at all.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a point that a lot of Republicans have brought up, that there are a lot of states that don't do any early voting. And Ohio has one of the biggest calendars for early voting, even with the legislature shaving off that 1 week where you could register and vote in the same week. And so I think you're absolutely right that if Ohio weren't a big battleground state, that, well, first of all, the Obama administration would probably not have filed the lawsuit in 2012 to open up those 3 days of voting the weekend before the election. But certainly Ohio's role as a battleground state really makes those 3 days and all of early voting in general such a big deal here. But, you know, the thing is, once you have those days on the calendar and people do them, they vote on that day, it's hard to pull back on those. And that's what a lot of Republicans are finding out as they try to change the early voting calendar. And even though they say there's more early voting opportunities for Ohioans than there are in people in other states, you have those days and then you take them away. A lot of people get really angry about that.
Well, and it was pretty, and it was clear, obviously, that, you know, the Obama campaign filed a lawsuit in 2012, as you said, and the Democrats have been pushing for this. Just anecdotally, I mean, you can go to the Board of Elections here in Hamilton County prior to a big presidential election and see who is casting early in-person ballots. And it's predominantly African Americans who tend to vote Democratic.
But you still, I think, do, and this is one thing that maybe the Secretary of State's office hasn't done in terms of breaking down early voting. You have a lot of people, Republicans and Democrats, who use the option of ordering the ballot, you know,
yes,
filling out the absentee application and mailing it in. And I think a lot of people don't know who's using that option, that maybe the standing in line option, it's certainly the most visible, and you could stand there, like you said. And I remember in 2012, I went outside a voting office here in Columbus, and the line was just enormous, and it was political theater at its finest. You had all sorts of crazy stuff going on. You had mimes and dancing and people dressed as Sesame Street characters and pro-life and pro-choice people, and everybody was screaming and yelling. It was crazy, which made for great work for me. But, you know, I think the whole concept of early voting is a little bit misunderstood in terms of who's actually using it. I think there are a lot of people who are using it that maybe people don't expect are using it.
Are you getting the impression now that this push, the petition drive for the Voting Rights Act, is going to come up short?
I think it might. I mean, I know they're aiming for 2014, and Alicia Reese, the representative from Cincinnati, is one of the big push behind this. But I think they might come up short for this year. You also do have a conservative organization that is starting a petition drive. They're never going to make it for this year, I wouldn't think, where their focus is more on voter ID, which, of course, Democrats are very concerned about. So, you know, you have potentially these two dueling voter opportunities on the ballot, and what are voters' rights. And what would be really interesting if they both got on the ballot on the same year, because if they both got enacted, who knows what would happen.
And if this voter bill of rights were to hit the ballot this year, does that help the Democrats or GOP turnout?
Well, typically in non-presidential years, GOP turnout is stronger in Ohio, even though there are more registered Democrats in Ohio. So it could potentially be a rallying point for Democrats to try to bring more of their voters to the polls. But it's kind of, it's not the sexiest issue in the world. It's not like, for instance, in 2004, as I mentioned, where you had the Defense of Marriage Act in Ohio, the same-sex marriage amendment that was on the ballot in 2004. That brought out huge numbers, as well as being a presidential year. And so Democrats do have their work cut out for them this year to try to bring their voters in, because there's no Senate Bill 5 repeal on the ballot, and it's not a presidential year. So, and I think they're really going to struggle to try to get something that really brings their group en masse and their voters together. I think the biggest thing they're going to try to start doing, perhaps, is campaigning and talking about their ticket as a slate, as opposed to individual candidates, but as a slate of candidates that they want their voters to cast a ballot for altogether, rather than individual candidates in individual races.
I'm wondering where you see the governor's race standing right now. I mean, the campaign finance reports are, you know, showing obviously Kasich's, you know, raised $9.3 million, Fitzgerald $1.9 million. Do you see this as a competitive race at this point?
Well, it's still early,
yeah.
And obviously we've been paying a lot more attention to it, you and me, Howard, other people, than a lot of voters do.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the argument that we keep hearing. But I think Fitzgerald's campaign has struggled a little bit to try to find a message and really an issue to hang his campaign on. I mean, it's gone from transparency to Kasich not serving the middle class, and you know, it's bounced around a little bit. And so I think, you know, I believe that there are, again, more registered Democrats than there are Republicans, but Republicans do better in these years. I think, you know, this race is looking like it might swing toward Governor Kasich, and certainly the polls are showing that. But, you know, we do have a long time. I wouldn't definitely call this race over by any stretch.
Yeah, I mean, Fitzgerald, one of the things he needs to do is move those poll numbers sometime between now and Labor Day.
Yes.
But that takes money.
Yes.
And he's sort of in a chicken and egg situation, because, you know, you can't raise the numbers unless you've got the money.
Right. Yeah, and that's what he's really going to struggle with, because, you know, the polls show that, what is it, 70% of voters have not even heard of him, much less have an opinion of him. That's a serious deficit to overcome in a short period of time. It certainly can be done. I mean, we've seen all sorts of unusual things that have happened in votes in the last couple of years. I mean, who would have thought Eric Cantor would have lost, you know?
Right.
And so it's not that it can't be done. It's just, it's a big hurdle to overcome in a fairly short period of time.
Before we run out of time here, one thing you said, that Ed Fitzgerald has been searching for an issue. What about the situation involving Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor and some of the problems in her office? Is that an issue that they're hoping to capitalize on?
Oh, sure. Democrats have been raising questions about Mary Taylor for a long time, and the idea that there were two people in her office who were, as she kind of implied, misusing flex time. How did she not know that they weren't there if she was in the office too? You know, and you're hearing Democrats ask these kinds of questions. But then Republicans are also asking the same kinds of questions of Ed Fitzgerald in terms of how much time he's spending in the office. They have folks who are following Ed Fitzgerald around to various campaign events wearing sandwich boards that look like key cards, because there are media outlets that have requested for Fitzgerald to release his key card records to show when he's in the office and when he's actually out campaigning. So that issue potentially cuts both ways. And the Democrats have struggled with that a lot, this idea of things cutting both ways, and the charges that they raise against Republicans have also affected them. And then that goes the same for Republicans as well.
What can you tell us about the Supreme Court saying that the anti-abortion group can challenge the Ohio law that bars people from making false statements about political candidates during a campaign?
I think that's fascinating. You've got basically a law that says you can't make false statements, and now the Supreme Court says that you can challenge that law, which I think could potentially be very frustrating to a lot of voters who already say that they have a difficult time trying to get honest information in campaigns. And so it really does open that up. I mean, certainly free speech advocates have said that, you know, this is an interesting development, but it's really an unusual case, and I think it's very, very interesting.
Now, does the case come back to a local federal court?
I believe so. I think that's the progression.
Yes.
But once again, Steve Driehaus dropped the lawsuit,
the
original suit, and so it's interesting to see where this will go.
And we have just about a minute left. We finally got the long-awaited ruling on Jobs Ohio.
Yep.
And what was the ruling?
The ruling was, there is no ruling, in a sense. There's no decision yet been issued on whether Jobs Ohio and the creation of it was constitutional. This was a ruling that said basically a liberal group along with two Democratic state lawmakers could not sue. They did not have the legal authority to ask the court to rule on whether Jobs Ohio was constitutional. So once again, we still have no definitive decision on whether Jobs Ohio and the creation of it was constitutional. So Jobs Ohio continues as forward, and we'll wait to see if anything else happens.
And just quickly, for something else to happen, then they would have to find somebody withstanding to file a new lawsuit?
That's my understanding, and the court kind of opened the door saying, hey, if there's somebody, there are people who do have standing, they can sue, but then there's also a question of a 90-day statute of limitations and whether the lawsuit was filed appropriately there. So there are a lot of legal avenues here. The number of legal avenues is getting smaller and smaller, but I guess there's still an opportunity here for somebody.
And you'll be watching the roadmap for us, I'm sure.
You bet.
We've been talking with Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler about political and legislative headlines from around the state. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks.
Thanks for the invitation to be here. I appreciate it.
And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.